drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. In the 1950s, Esther Amini was growing up in New York, a Jewish girl with an American childhood of ice skating, school lessons and concerts at Radio City Music Hall. But her parents had come from Iran, and in the city where they grew up, their religion was banned and women were not expected to read, let alone become educated. And so there was a split between the wider world and the world of her home. And her parents' scars were still very much part of their story and her own. Esther Amini is a psychotherapist and a writer, and her memoir is called Concealed. And she's my guest in the drawing room. Esther, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Tell me about your parents, the way you experienced them when you were growing up.
Well, as a child, I really didn't understand them at all. I experienced them as medieval. They had come from the Iranian city of Mashhad, and one needs to know a bit about that city. It's unlike the other cities in Iran. It's the most fanatically religious city in all of Iran, a Shiite stronghold and pilgrimage site with a long history of maiming and massacring infidels. So my parents, who led a life of duplicity, who pretended they were Muslim above ground and were devout Jews underground, had to live an inauthentic life and were paranoid. All of this as a child, I didn't understand. I knew they came from Iran. I was born in New York City, and I felt very American. And my father was fearful of the outside world, very quiet, nonverbal for the most part, was suspicious of America, did not want me to become educated. He came from a world, and again, this is specific to the city of Mashhad, where girls were married off at a very, very young age. My grandmother, this is my father's mother, was married at the age of 9 to my grandfather, who was then 29. And my mother, who was 14, was married to my father, who was 34. So this is the background. And girls were not educated. They were not allowed to learn to read and write. And the prevailing wisdom at that time was that an illiterate girl becomes an excellent wife. There won't be any conflict. She won't have an opinion of her own. Of course, none of this is really true, but the idea was that she would not come in with ideas and be oppositional in any way. So coming from that background, my father wanted me to be very much a Mashhadi daughter, a daughter who, as if I had been raised in Mashhad. So this, of course, I understood later on. But as a child, I didn't understand him, and I had to hide who I was. So the title Concealed is not only about my parents who had to conceal their true identity and my ancestors. I mean, my family dates back 2,700 years in Iran. So the concealment certainly went on for a very long time and I think entered their DNA. But then I grew up in New York and I found myself concealing who I am, who I want to be, my aspirations, my interest in education. And so that concealment only continued.
Your mother was from the same background as your father, but was she completely different, rebellious and, you know, thinking differently about these things?
Absolutely. She was his diametric opposite. Again, she had not selected him as a mate, but she was outspoken, defiant, larger than life, rather theatrical in personality. And she too was illiterate. She couldn't read or write, but she was streetwise. And she, in many ways, was difficult because she was impulsive. And I guess I just never knew who I was going to meet on a given day. And yet, the overall feeling was that she was heroic, because she defied convention and listened to her own drummer. And for that, I'm very grateful. But growing up, it was very complicated and confusing and often very humorous. I mean, there were many, many situations, which I wrote about in the book, where she and he conflicted, misunderstood each other, interpreted one another totally differently, as well as culture clashes. You know, the Iranian perception of the world and the American perception of the world are also very, very different. And so there are a lot of comical moments as to how these two worlds lived side by side but didn't understand one another.
Tell me about the day you went with your mother to the Oscar de la Renta showroom.
I was a teenager, and my mother decided that she wanted to go to the Oscar de la Renta wholesale showroom in Manhattan and buy dresses. And she was going to present herself as a boutique owner from Tehran. Meanwhile, we lived in New York. She did not own a boutique. And she took me with her, I think at the time, to translate in case she had any difficulty with the English language. And she actually was able to bluff her way in, buy dresses, win the salesman over, and become a frequent visitor. And she filled all of her closets with Oscar de la Renta dresses and was always very, very finely dressed. But all of this was kind of a bluff job, and I was in awe of her. I was ashamed. I was frightened. I was in awe. Every emotion one can imagine. And I was also young and a teenager and feeling very transparent at that time. And she felt strong as an ox. No one frightened her. And being deceptive was easy for her. And I later in life, I thought about it, and I think it had a lot to do with growing up in the city of Mashhad, where deception was something she had to practice and she had to master.
Your father had this strong view of women and how they should be. It was something that you had to deal with, obviously, as a woman growing up in that household. But it seems like he largely accepted your mother's behavior. Is that right?
Well, accepted is not the word I would choose. He had to either look the other way or argue. And there was a lot of conflict in the home. He always wanted her to change. He wanted her to be, I guess, more deferential. And he wanted her to be more respectful of him and of authority figures. They fought very often, which made it difficult for me as a child. But she would not buckle, regardless of what he said, what he did, how he threatened her. She held her head high and marched forward, doing whatever it was she wanted to do. And they stayed together. They, you know, in that culture at that time, men and women did not divorce, regardless of how unhappy they might have been. They stayed together. And so they stayed together, but opposed one another very often.
On RN, I'm Patricia Carvelist. Esther Amini is my guest in the drawing room, and we're talking about her book, Concealed. So how was this affecting you, the way that your parents treated you and, of course, each other? What was it doing to young Esther?
Well, I'm glad you say young Esther, Patricia, because it did different things to me at different stages. And I think as a child, I was very timid and frightened. I didn't feel safe with either parent. Although I admired my mother, I was also frightened of her impulsivity. And with my father, he was rather explosive. He was either explosive or silent and withdrawn. So I was frightened. As a teenager, I would say I was frustrated. Frustrated because my father, I felt he stood in my way. He did not want me to be educated. He didn't want me to go off to college. He actually prohibited speech in the home, and he felt speech was dangerous. So there were so many elements of Meshed that I was dealing with that I was totally frustrated and turned off. But again, I was a quiet child. I mean, I kept it to myself and I fumed silently. But I have to go fast forward and say that later in life, I really feel that as complicated as that childhood was, and at times very, very humorous, I walked away later in life feeling it all served me. It all served me positively. I learned so much from the two extremes that I grew up with. I also had two phenomenal brothers who are older than I am. They were each born in Iran and came as toddlers to this country. This is right after World War II when they arrived with my parents. And years later, I was born. So my two older brothers were pillars of strength and metaphorically put me on their shoulders and held me high and wanted me to see the world through their eyes. And that was an incredible gift. And so to answer your question, Patricia, later in life, I began to realize how all these obstacles only strengthened me. And I think I took the best from each parent and valued their differences. And I think it forced me also to grow up and to lean on myself in many ways and over time trust my own judgment. So it was all very productive.
Your brothers sound like they were a real lifeline throughout your childhood. They invited you to university and even took you bra shopping, right?
That's right. Albert is the eldest, and when my body was growing and changing, it was Albert who said, I think we should go and buy you a bra. And he took me to a department store in New York, and he played the part of mother and had a saleswoman help us. And it made me feel so grown up and so womanly, but he did it in such a sensitive and careful way so that I actually enjoyed the whole experience and will never forget the fact that it was Albert who bought me my first bunch of bras. He bought me five and he did many other things. And David, who is next in line, he is the middle child. He exposed me to literature and took me to museums. And this was all at a very young age and introduced me to art. And but we did all of this secretly. We did all of this quietly. Our discussions were hushed. When my father would walk into the bedroom, if we were talking, we'd quickly change the subject, or I'd walk out pretending that I had just stepped in to say a few words. We had to conceal the fact that I was being exposed to the world through them.
Did you feel fearful?
Oh, definitely. As a child, I was a frightened child, fearful of my father's rage. My mother, you'd have to know more about my mother. She was an orphan and was raised by a wonderful stepmother, but she always felt like an orphan. And whenever she felt hurt or blocked in any way, she would pack her bags and run away. And so I grew up watching my mother often run away. I have memories from the age of two and on, not knowing where she's going to go, just seeing her huff and puff and pack a bag and run out the door. And days later, she'd come back. So there was the fear of losing her, and there was the fear of my father's rage, not really having a comfort zone, except for my two brothers, who stepped in and in many ways served as surrogate parents. Albert is 10 years older than me, and David is 7 years older than me, and yet they grew up very quickly and were mothering me.
You had to fight to get to college, but you got there. Tell me what happened when you finally moved onto campus and your family came with you to see your new room.
Oh, my goodness. That was a wild story. Firstly, I grew up forging my father's signature on my report cards for school because I was doing well and I didn't want him to know it. Contrary to other children who might be forging signatures because they don't want their father to know that they aren't doing well. You know, for me, it was the opposite. And so I did well in school and I wanted to go off to university. I wanted to go to college and I was applying to schools behind his back. I don't know what I was thinking because I was applying to private colleges that had high tuitions and there was no way I could pay for it, but I did. And I applied and I was accepted to Barnard College, which is part of Columbia University. At that time, Barnard was the girls' school of Columbia University in New York. And I was accepted and thrilled. Fast forward, my father certainly didn't want me to attend, but even beyond that, I wanted to move in to the dormitories and experience the full experience of being a college student. I wanted to live on campus and not be commuting from home, which I could do at that time. So when I chose to move in, my father went on a hunger strike, a suicidal hunger strike. He stopped eating. And he crawled into bed. He grew a long beard. This went on for many, many days. And he felt that he was going to lose me, not just lose me, but that the outside world would corrupt me. And in his mind, an educated woman would become a prostitute, that she would become sexually promiscuous, and in short, I would become a whore. And this is what that's why he went on a hunger strike. It was as if he was going to kill himself because his daughter would shame him and lead a guttered life. Meanwhile, I was going to attend a very prestigious university. I had no intentions of becoming promiscuous. And I was a studious child, a virgin, and I intended to stay a virgin. But those were his thoughts. And I'm hesitant, Patricia, to tell you what happened at the end because I would like your listeners to read the book. Because the punchline is crazy as to what happened when I moved in, and my father was determined to follow me into that bedroom that I was going to sleep in. So I think I'll leave that as a mystery, and hopefully your listeners will read the book and get a chuckle for themselves.
Why did you decide to write the memoir? Why did you want to tell the story of your family now?
Well, it's a story that hasn't been told. It's a it's the story. It begins actually as the story of the Mashadi Jews who lived like the Muranos of Spain, and they never told their story in a firsthand account. As I already mentioned, the women were illiterate. They were not writing diaries, and the men were living these dual identities, and they weren't putting their feelings into journals. And so there are no memoirs. There are no private accounts of what life felt like. And I learned all about my family's past from my parents, by questioning relatives. And I realized that I was the bridge between their past and the present. And I felt compelled to tell their story, not only the historical part, but how trauma gets passed on to the next generation, even though here I was growing up attending public school with other American children, how their underground cryptic life became mine. And I felt it had many, many threads to the story that needed to be told, especially since no one could prior to me. I am the first in my family, again, coming from the city of Mashhad, the first from both my father's side and my mother's side that can read and write, the first female. Men were literate, but I'm the first female that is able to read and write. And I not only went off to college and went off to graduate school and became a psychoanalytic psychotherapist, but I decided, like, I think I have an obligation. I have an obligation to put it down on paper when all the women before me could not. And that weighed heavily on me as well.
Esther, thank you so much for coming in and telling us your story.
Thank you for having me.
And that's Esther Amini. She's been my guest in The Drawing Room. Her book is called Concealed, and she's appearing online at the Sydney Jewish Writers Festival on Tuesday, the 25th of August.